Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart. PBS called The Lavender Scare, and well, rather than go through the whole thing, because we'll have somebody else tell you about it. As a matter of fact, we're going to have Josh Howard, the director, is on the line now to talk about this documentary. Josh, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Nice to talk to you. I have to apologize for the noise in the background. They started doing some construction outside my window this morning, and
right
I hope
outside
that's not,
the window.
They I'm here on the 29th floor, and there are guys on a scaffolding with a pneumatic drill.
Goodness.
I don't know if you can hear that in the background, but I hope it's not too distracting.
Okay, it's all right.
All right, good.
So far. So far, okay. So,
yes.
I know. It's New York City, and there's construction everywhere.
True.
And not just on the ground.
If it becomes too annoying, we can tell. I will call you back at another time if you prefer. But
no, actually, I don't. I barely hear it in the background.
Good. Okay.
Okay. So, first of what I want to talk about is tell my audience, introduce yourself, and then start with that.
Okay.
Who are
you?
Well,
as you said, my name is Josh Howard. I worked in television news for almost 30 years, and was happily retired from that job when I came across a book called The Lavender Scare, and decided it would be an interesting, it would make an interesting documentary.
Okay, so now tell us about what it's about.
Well, in the years after World War II, it was believed that gay men and lesbians were a security threat. The theory was that they would be subject to blackmail by foreign agents. And they would give away government secrets in exchange for keeping their own sexuality private. And so in April of 1953, President Eisenhower signed an executive order that directed every agency of the U.S. government to seek out and fire any employees who were discovered to be gay.
Wow. Was this just in the federal government?
Well, his executive order applied to all agencies of the federal government, plus any private companies that did business with the government. And in these years, during the Cold War, a huge amount of money was going into the military infrastructure. And it's estimated that one in five jobs in the United States fell under Eisenhower's executive order. Beyond that, this position of the federal government was, you know, followed by local governments throughout the country. The feeling was, if the federal government says that gay people are a threat, then we should get rid of our gay employees as well. So it really set off this chain reaction of homophobia that spread throughout the workforce and throughout the country.
Wow. Yeah, well, I'm 70 years old, just, you know. I hadn't even heard about this. I mean, I heard, I guess the thing that I was hearing, the thing that, not that I was hearing at the time, but around that time, wasn't that the McCarthy era?
It was. And this was kind of an outgrowth of McCarthy. You know, McCarthy was making charges that the State Department and other branches of government had been infiltrated by communists. And he was making, a lot of political hay on that argument. It turned out that there really weren't that many communists in the government. And his influence and his ability to sell this argument was beginning to wane. But then they hit on this idea of homosexuals. And the fact is, there were a lot of homosexuals working for the government. And by portraying them as security risks, it was McCarthy and his allies were able to kind of reinvigorate this as a political issue. Gay men and lesbians became a much easier target. But, you know, to your other point, I didn't know about this either. And just for the record, I'm 65. And, I grew up, during a good chunk of the gay rights movement. But this story was not known to me either. And it wasn't until I found this book called The Lavender Scare by David K. Johnson that I became aware of how systematically the government enforced this policy of homophobia and how diligent they were about seeking out and firing gay employees of the government.
Wow. It just, we're not far from things like that right now, sort of.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, really when I started this project, and I started working on this almost 10 years ago, it took quite some time to get it done for a variety of reasons. But when I started working on it, I really did see it as history, you know, an interesting part of history, but, you know, history nonetheless. And, you know, with it coming out finally now, there are so many themes in the movie that are echoing the times where we live in today, and it's just, sadly, the message of the film is a lot more relevant today than I ever expected it would be.
So, give us an idea of some of the things that are in the movie itself, in the documentary.
Well, we interview a number of people who had worked for the federal government and were fired because they were discovered to be gay. And we hear their stories. We also hear from some of the government officials who were responsible for instituting and carrying out this policy. And, you know, in a way, I find their stories to be the most interesting because I was fascinated to hear, you know, through with 2020 hindsight, how they felt about their role in firing people and instituting this policy. We also hear the story of a guy named Frank Kameny, who I was aware of but really didn't understand necessarily his pivotal role in the history of the gay rights movement. Frank was an astronomer, PhD from Harvard. He was working for the U.S. government, and he was fired when they found out that he was gay. probably 5,000 people, we estimate, were fired before Frank. And every one of them went quietly without a fight. They wanted to stay in the closet. They needed to get on with their lives, and they went quietly. And Frank Kameny was the first person to stand up and say, this is wrong. And he fought to keep his job and change the policy. And in doing so, he embarked on a lifetime of gay activism. And it's really hard to come up with the name of another person who contributed more than Frank to the movement over his long lifetime.
Yeah, so I understand they call him now. He was recognized as the grandfather of gay rights movement, of the gay rights movement.
He was. At one point, I think he was referred to as the father of it, and then he reached a certain age, and then he promoted himself to a grandfather. But, we're marking the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, which is so often referred to as the start of the gay rights movement. But, you know, it's also important to remember that there were people, courageous people, who predated Stonewall, Frank Kameny and Barbara Giddings and Lily Vincennes and Jack Nichols and a small group of other really courageous people who in the mid-1960s, years before Stonewall, were starting to protest and hold picket lines and demonstrations and really get the ball rolling on what would become the gay rights movement.
And I they even show, I know there's a clip of Stonewall in the documentary.
Well, there's a short mention of Stonewall just for historical context.
Yeah.
A lot of the film is chronological, and we show, we go through the Depression years and then World War II, and so we do use historical moments to provide the timeline context. I wouldn't at all call this it's certainly not the definitive story of Stonewall or the definitive story of the gay rights movement. It really is a film about this specific issue of the government deciding to institutionalize homophobia, really, and what effects that had on individual people and the society in general.
Yeah, well, for me, I think I never understood what the problem was. I mean, with all the things, I always say, with all the things going on in this world, why should somebody care? What is it?
Well, it's such an interesting point because, during the Depression and then during the years of World War II, nobody much did care. Gay issues, the issues of homosexuality, weren't really top of mind. And it wasn't until the late 1940s when a combination of things happened. The Kinsey Report came out, which contained a shocking statistic on the number of American men who supposedly had homosexual experiences. But, at the same time, the Cold War began. There was a fear about national security. The country was growing more conservative, socially conservative, as a backlash against the more permissive times of the Depression and the war years. And all this came together to really create this lavender scare and, in effect, demonize homosexuality and gay people.
Now, and doing this documentary, did you, was this like this was taken from the book? I mean, did you pick out whatever was in the book?
Well, the book provided,
as opposed to going like what it said in the book. Did you,
in
other words, add some things? Like the interviews, for instance.
We did. Certainly it was the book that provided the jumping off point, and I did work closely with David Johnson, the author of the book, who provided his files and contacts and documents. He worked for years trying to get various documents and files from the government declassified. So that was certainly the scholarly structure of the film. But we then went out and found additional people to interview. It was our researchers found the government officials who we interviewed. So it was a combination of, David's research as the foundation, but then we did, expand beyond that. David's book began as his PhD thesis, and so it was thoroughly peer reviewed, and we certainly had a huge amount of confidence in the research that he did. But doing a PhD is a different discipline than doing making a film, and I think he and I were able to combine the two. And I think we're both pretty happy with the result.
Well, I did get to watch it, so I thought it was perfect timing for the 50th anniversary.
Well, and again, I think perfect
is one of the things.
Perfect timing for the 50th anniversary, but also perfect timing to send a message that we've made enormous progress, obviously, in the past decade and more in the area of gay rights. But we've also more recently seen some of that progress erode in the same way in which it did in the 1950s. And I think that's perfect timing also for the film, that it's coming out at a time when the message is, something that I think younger people particularly should take to heart.
Yeah, because I think they probably have no knowledge of like any of it, you can hear about it, know about it, but they're not experiencing it, any of it right now.
Exactly. And when I think, as a kid growing up, if I could have opened the New York Times or whatever publication and seen wedding announcements of same-sex couples, when I was growing up, the only time you'd read about a gay person would be if they were getting arrested for one thing or another.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure younger people necessarily realize how difficult times were and how courageous, some people were back then to really, take on society and start the movement going.
Yeah, well, it takes a lot of protesting and things like that to sometimes even protesting doesn't help.
That's true, but it. Here's an example of one guy, Frank Kameny, who was, pretty much out there himself. And, he said, I'm not going to let society change me. I'm going to change society. And lo and behold, that's what he managed to do. So you do have to, I think that's an important message, that protests and dedication to a cause are important.
That's hopefully certain other things will get changed too.
Yes. Still a long way to go.
Yeah. Now in terms of, let's say, getting the actors, who chose the actors? I know there's one that it's narrated by Glenn Close, but then it features in the voices. I mean, would people know these voices?
Well,
I think so. Cynthia Nixon and...
Cynthia Nixon, David Hyde Pierce,
Zachary Quinto. Is that it? And
T.R.
Knight?
T.R. was, one of the original actors on Grey's Anatomy and was on that show for years. And, we're very grateful to all of them for being willing to participate in the project. Yeah, I think
not only do they bring
yeah. some of these people, you know, to life through their letters and their writing, but obviously they raise the visibility of the film just thanks to their star power. So we're very grateful for that.
And I just also want to get it clear to people that when they see the interviews, they're not actors portraying the people that you're interviewing.
The people who you see on camera being interviewed are the real people. The actors read some of the documents and the letters. Yeah, we have segments where we dramatize some of Frank Kameny's letters to various
right.
people, to his family, to members of Congress. And so on those sections where we see Frank at the typewriter and we hear, you know, the words of, you know, what he's writing, those are his real letters, but obviously that wasn't his voice recorded at, you know, at the
right.
time he was
yeah.
writing the letters.
Well, this is what is you have another project coming up?
Well, I still have enough work to do on this one. You know, it was released in theaters last week, and it's running on PBS for the next couple of weeks at various times in various parts of the country. But you know, then I want to spend time taking the film around to local community groups and schools, and you know, really try to spread the message, because you know, it's half the battle is producing the film, and the second half is getting people to see it and appreciate it. And so I'm going to have my hands full doing that for the next year or so, and then we'll see what comes after that. But for the time being, The Lavender Scare is still taking up my time, and
okay,
happily so.
So being on PBS, I mean, PBS is available. Is that available worldwide, or how? What?
No, it's they had North American rights for this broadcast. You know, the version they showed was 25 minutes shorter than the full version of the film. So I do think the full version gives a slightly fuller picture of history and context. But, you know, there are lots of, you know, for instance, we want schools and colleges to hold screenings and, you know, put the movie in their, you know, in their libraries. And so we think, as, you know, as effective as PBS is in getting, you know, a mass audience in a short amount of time, we really do think the film has much more distribution potential out there. And as I said, we would love to see it in every school and library and make it available to, you know, everyone who wants to see it.
Well, if I could be of assistance in doing that, just let me know.
Absolutely.
Aside from, tomorrow the newspaper that I write for comes out, and I already have the article. As soon as I saw it, I said, let me get this article done for this week.
Great.
So I put it in. So the article will be in, and now and then I'll be putting this up on my Facebook page, and that's what I could do at this end. And, of course, if it comes that, let's say that you're going to show it in, you know, like schools in New York City or something, and you want that put out there in the paper or whatever, I can do that as well.
Well, and we have two more days to go at Cinema Village, downtown. In the Village. It's been running for 2 weeks, and so Thursday is the last day of the run at Cinema Village, but people can still catch it there. And you know, we have our website as well, which is thelavenderscare.com, and any future broadcasts and will be announced there.
So let me ask you, when I saw, I was given a copy of the screener, did I see the whole thing or did I only see part of it?
I'm not sure which version our press people would have sent. I assume they would have sent the full version. TV
okay.
critics specifically got the shorter version, but I think more general interest journalists such as yourself would have received the full version. So,
oh, okay.
That would be my guess.
I saw it on something called Vimeo.
Yes. And the full version is 75 minutes. The PBS version is 54 minutes. So it's a big big additional chunk.
Okay, I'll take a look and see which one I got.
All right.
Okay. I appreciate your calling in. Is there anything that you want to add to this?
No, I thank you for your support for the film, and I'm just eager for people to see it and take from it what they will. So I just appreciate the opportunity to speak about it.
Okay. Well, as I said, if it's being showed in schools or whatever, and if I could be assistance, just let me know.
I absolutely will. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and thank you for calling in, and this is a very important piece of news, that's for sure.
Well, thank you. Good talking to you.
And same here. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Okay, bye, Josh, and put on some earphones.
Well, I think you brought good luck because they seem to have stopped. They started
stopped.
Right before the call, and now that we're finished, they seem to have wrapped up. But I hope it wasn't too irritating.
No, you'll hear, because what I'll do is I'm going to send the link to the show, to this interview, and
okay.
I'll send the link, and I guess you'll be able to hear it and go, you hardly even heard them.
I hope so.
Okay. Have a great
right.
day.
Thanks. You
bye, Josh.
Bye-bye.
Okay. So, PBS, just go to www.pbs.org, and you can see Lavender Scare is going to be shown in the meantime. So I am going to end the show. I have to... Yep, it's the rubber chickens. Okay. They had to, of course. They just wanted to say hello and goodbye. So, all right, everybody. Until next time, which I have a feeling will be quite soon because I saw something else coming up that it's going to be of interest. So, again, everybody, have a wonderful whatever.